Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this week back on the show, we've got Joel Nelson over there in southern Minnesota. I always get excited to have Joel on. He's just a real fishy individual. We're going to talk fall fishing. We're going to spend probably most of our time talking walleyes, but as you know, Joel's a multi-species guy, so we're going to fit some of that in too. It's one of my favorite fall fishing conversations here, just talking with Joel and spending a lot of time talking about weather and how weather affects fall fishing. There's just a lot to learn, a lot of nuancey stuff in this week's show. And wherever you're getting the podcast, whether you're on Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts, or following along on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and share with all your fishing friends. And please head over to Jason Mitchell Outdoors Online. Click the apparel button and you can see some cool new merch we got over there for the podcast. We've got some t-shirts and hats. Anybody that heads over there to check that out, we appreciate that so much. Let's get into this interview with Joel Nelson talking fall fishing.
Taylor.
Joel.
How we doing?
Doing good, man. How are you doing?
Awesome. Can you hear me? I've had some phone scrambly issues today. Is it okay?
Man, it sounds really good.
Good. Perfect.
We're going to talk kind of this end of the summer or late summer transitioning into fall time frame here to kind of set the stage that way. And I guess to start it off, man, how have things been for you over in your part of the world this year with, you know, it's kind of low water across the Midwest. So talking to the river fishermen everywhere, you know, it's a lot of low flow and not as much current. And so things are setting up differently for everybody. And then same thing, you know, even the lake systems are down where, you know, structure is shallower and people are finding new spots. To recap some of your summer fishing, bring us up to speed. How has it been for you this year?
Yeah. Well, thanks first for having me on. But yeah, as far as my summer, I've been lucky. It's been a great year. Kind of up to the last few weeks, it's starting to slow down a little bit. What's really kind of killed some of my bites is a lack of wind and a lack of water and lack of flow, kind of what you mentioned. But up until this point, it's been kind of miraculous how good it's been. We've had decent weather. The one thing we have had is some consistency. It hasn't been good for the farmers. It hasn't been good for folks that have a garden, but, that consistent kind of stretch where you don't have these, fronts that keep rolling in every 3 days has really made, my fishing pretty decent for a number of species. I've been fishing a lot of crappies, a lot of panfish, like I love to do. I tell you one little wrinkle, it's been tough. Some of the places I fish, some of the brush piles or logs or submerged cover is now out of the water. You got to be careful when you fish it. It's no big deal if you're over there with a boat and nobody can see it, but if you're over there with a boat and you're pitching on a log, people might see that and make mental note of it and come back and clean your crappies off of it. So I've had to be a little careful at times this summer, let's say.
That's a very heads up assessment there, especially when the bites are kind of tough. You really want to go back to what you know is good, and yeah, you could really show your hand there a little bit. That's an interesting take. For sure, man, for sure. I mean, for you, do you think, I mean, have you seen the water low in the past? I mean, what are some of the conversations like over there? You know, is it, you know, water this low? Do you feel like it kind of has a lasting effect? I mean, what do you think are going to be some of the heads up things to be paying attention to now, as far as, you know, as we move forward?
You know, I have seen it this low before. It's been a long time. You know, it's definitely affecting the way people are launching their boats if they're able to get on certain bodies of water at all. It's actually, for some of these lakes, been a little bit of a blessing in disguise, has reduced some of the pressure on certain bodies of water. But one thing I'm definitely noting is something Travis Frank posted on social media a little bit. If you guys know Travis, he astute angler, Waconia area. He was talking about some of these smaller rivers and riverbeds, even places like the Mississippi. You know, I crossed the Mississippi up by Grand Rapids way here not too long ago, and it looked like a little trickle with a bunch of rocks in it. So if you're interested in scouting your favorite stream or small river, it might not be the best time to fish it, but holy cow, will you learn about your favorite stretches right now. So I've been telling folks that fish a lot of those small bodies of water to get out and do it. And as it pertains to the lakes, you know, what I am seeing is I'm seeing a fair amount of, you know, algae type buildup and some of that that's making it hard, just because when you don't have wind to kind of push stuff around a little bit, and you have those strong algal blooms, it's making for a pretty soupy mess. Better plan on spraying your boat off when you pull it out of the water.
Yeah, totally. Do you think there's going to be a lasting effect whatsoever with some things? Maybe good, maybe bad, anything like that?
You know, as far as lasting effect, I don't think so. With the exception of some of these water bodies, I think of Mille Lacs, and I'm a little concerned about it. I look at some of these water bodies that on the edge of the Tullabees Range, and we all know how important Siskos and Tullabees, you know, are for bigger species like muskies and walleyes and so on and so forth. As a forage species, you know, we've had such warm water temps this season, and that's my biggest concern. It has less to do with the low water personally and more to do with the fact that we got really warm water temps very early, and we're getting a little bit of a break from the heat right now. But, you know, water temps got elevated early, meaning the duration of high water temps and the amount of stress on certain species like tullabee could be higher. And so if we get another one of those terrible hot stretches, just these really brutal, brutal stretches where you're hitting water temps in the high 80s, like we've seen down on Lake Pepin and some of the areas that I've been fishing. I mean, I had like an 86 degree water temp there, and I'm picking walleyes out of the water and they're warm to the touch. It's just kind of an oddball deal. Those are the times that I worry about, less so about the low water and more so about the water temps themselves.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You made such a good point there. And like in the morning, you know, like when it's 65, 70 degrees on kind of an average morning and you're fishing in these water temps this summer, I noticed, you know, you get out and you get those first couple fish in the morning when they come out of that water, that's like 15 degrees warmer than the air temps right away in the morning. And those fish feel like they came out of an oven. That is,
it's weird.
Oh gosh, it is bizarre. And there's probably examples of it every year, but gosh, it seems like this whole summer. Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're spot on with that take with the, you know, the whitefish and tullabees. There's definitely some locations, you know, back in my old stomping grounds, that Ottertail County area, where, you know, there's some guys that, you know, they're seeing a few popping up floating on shore. And it's definitely something to pay attention to, no doubt about it. But, you know, Mother Nature's a crazy thing. And like you say, as long as we get at some point a little bit of moisture, whatever the seasons change, and things will happen. We just gotta maneuver. And that being said, I tell you what, like when we were talking here just the other day about, you know, getting together, doing a podcast, what should we talk about? You said something. You included, you know, just talking about some wind-driven bites in the fall, and it made me realize so blatantly that, like, all last year and the year before, all my fall fishing episodes, I was working so hard to pick, like, maybe popular topics, things that people would want to listen to, really based around fish patterns and techniques, and I realized I haven't given any love to fall weather. in terms of dictating the bite, there's so much pain there. You already said it a couple times in this, just in our introduction here, where, you know, that stable, consistent weather in the summer is a good thing. But gosh, in the fall, valuing the weather patterns is kind of a different deal. So I kind of want to start off right there and maybe just hand it over to you. What does that really mean to you? Even you can go down any wormhole you want, but I really want to talk a bunch about, you know, this time of year where we're transitioning into fall, and what, you know, some of the key weather, contrasting weather ideas are compared to, you know, how we value it here in the summer and then during the transition period and then even into fall, if we can stretch that out.
Yeah, you bet. Well, you hit on it, how important fall weather can be to determining bites and getting your mind ready and your head screwed on straight with what to do and how to approach it. But Taylor, I know you're a bow hunter, and I think back, I don't bow hunt as much as I used to, but I can think back to, you know, opening deer season coming around mid-September. And if it was one of those years where you had cool mornings and maybe just a little bit of a breeze, you were happy to get out in the stand that day, contrasting with the, you know, every once in a while you'd get that, 90 degree hot day, mosquitoes. And I think of it very much the same way when it comes to fishing. When I get that hot weather in September, especially into October, I think of it, it's just a continuation of summer. And what it tells the fish is, you know, stay in your summer patterns. Life is easy breezy, you know, fat and sassy. We don't need to reach a long ways to go get food. There's no urgency in what they need to do to prepare for, you know, late fall and winter. And I find fish during those dog days times, even in September, even into early October, if the weather period's been warm, they're just in their summer patterns, living life. A lot of times it's deep. A lot of times it's relatively neutral or inactive. But there's usually one big weather pattern that rolls in and snaps everybody up to attention. And like I said, if you're a bow hunter, you know what I mean. It's you get a strong northwest wind coming in 20 miles an hour, brings down some of that Canadian air. You're talking about temperatures that are usually not quite yet flirting with freezing, but you're talking about temps in the 40s and 50s when you've been enjoying, you know, 80 degree shorts weather up until that point. And, you know, I don't love fishing right on the front end of that deal, but if I get a good wind event, and even without the temps, if I get a couple day wind event and a slight reduction in temperatures, I'm usually waiting till day two or day three of that wind-driven bite, and I'm looking to throw crankbaits. I have just had incredible success throwing jigs too, but wind for me in the fall is everything in churning up and starting to kick off what fall can really mean.
And it's just such a blatantly obvious thing, you know, like I said, that I've never really touched on, because what you just described would be like the kiss of death in July or August. It would be like what you would completely avoid, a cold front.
For sure.
You know, like a spike in pressure and then all of a sudden a north wind. You would might as well stay home for 3 days, before you would even go and try to feed a leech to something or whatever it is, you know. And so, you know, that's such a great point. And I think that, you know, fall fishing is it's growing in popularity. I think it's I don't know if everybody just, you know, for whatever reason, just kind of hangs it up, but fall fishing is like so many people that do it. It's their favorite time of year. And I think it's slowly catching on. And so some of these like basics, some of these, you know, just the real like obvious trendy things that you just those benchmark happenings, like that first good cold front that really snaps everybody into fall. It makes you want to make your first pot of chili for the year. It makes you want to watch some football, go set up a goose blind, you know, whatever it is. To a fisherman, that's like your mouth starts watering to go out and fish.
And it's hard to put down hard and fast rules to the thing, because every season is different. I was just looking at some old pictures. My first big walleye of the fall last year came on September 20th, and I remember it pretty distinctly. It was at the end of kind of a 2 or 3 day blow. It wasn't super cold, but you know, that first day, the fish would have done what you or I would have done. They're like, whoa, what is this? It is a little bit of a July type reaction, cold front reaction. But then after a few days of that, they kind of get settled into this deal where it's like, hey, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be winter soon. And they really start keying in on feeding. And it just tends to get better and better and better as those temps gradually reduce. You know, I can think of a lot of grouse hunts where we go up and do kind of a cast and blast, and you go to do an evening fish after you've been grouse hunting all day, and those fish are up shallow already. I mean, they're like, you know, 10, 12 feet of water, even in clear water bodies on the edge of a rock pile, just ready to tee off on something. And so that's why I think in the fall, especially active jigging patterns, throwing crankbaits, really focusing on the wind driven portion of the bite, you know, the shorelines that have been getting the brunt of that wind direction over several days, it really starts to produce, and not just any fish, but it tends to be big fish and it tends to be good numbers mixed in.
Do you think, I mean, I think any fisherman probably can wrap their head around fish in the wind, you know, for what it is. But do you think the wind is activating fish or moving fish in the same way in the fall as it is in the summer? Or is it basically, you know, maybe it doesn't really matter, right? If you fish the wind and you have luck, what's happening under the surface doesn't matter. But, you know, things that we talk about in the summer when the wind pushes up, you know, sometimes those fish are already hanging out there and it just sort of activates the ones that are already there. Do you think in the fall the fish are moving more? Like when we talk about the wind driven and, you know, getting right down to the, you know, the forage base and what's happening there. I mean, what do you think the wind is really doing to produce those productive spots?
You know, I think especially when you get later into the fall, it isn't just about the wind. It isn't just about, you know, the fish being nearby and going up to feed. It has to do with them following what they're feeding. And as water temperatures mix, you know, whether you got a thermocline in your system or not, whether it's a strong turnover or a weak turnover, I don't focus on those details as much. But I do know that once you have had turnover and you get even lake temperatures, those bait fish aren't just confined to the depths that they were previously. Those bait fish would prefer some of the shallow cover of rocks, some of the shallow weeds, areas that offer them some protection from predation. And where they lose that protection is where wind is pushing waves up and churning them up and stirring them about. And I can think of a lot of bites on the Mississippi River on Lake Pepin. I can think of bites up in your neck of the woods, up in Otter Tail County, even other ones in southern Minnesota, where these fish show up and you don't even notice the fish first. What you notice is actually the bait fish. The shallows are just teeming with them. And you cast a crankbait and it slaps down just in front of a rock and boom, a couple bait fish are jumping out of the water right there. And you're like, wow, okay, well, they're kind of full. Or on the Mississippi River, they're shad. And we'll actually have bites where the trains will come by on some of the tracks and shake some of those shad loose. And you can literally see as the train's shaking the crap out of everything, bait fish are swirling and twirling up there, and the walleyes are up there picking them off. So I think it's as much to do about conditioning the fish, the bait fish shallow, as it is the fish themselves.
Right on. And for you, pitch and cranks, I love when you talk about that, like getting after the artificials in shallow water. You know, that's a springtime thing, obviously. Everybody loves to pitch jigs or pitch cranks, you know, when the water's kind of getting a little warmer, those fish are activating a post-spawn or whatever. But in the fall, it seems like, you know, and to be fair, you know, the jig and a minnow thing really gets beat to death. I think that ultimately that's just tried and true and kind of goes through, has gone through the test of time. But I love when you say pitch and cranks. Now for you, is that just you being kind of an aggressive, you know, kind of experimental fisherman that you've really gotten confidence in that? Are you really matching the hatch? And do you really feel like, you know, I mean, how do you feel when you're evaluating your spots that is really just the ticket?
I look at it in terms of depth. And early on in the season, what you get a lot of is you get this first break versus secondary break kind of routine, where your first break, you come right offshore and it's 1 to 3 feet right up against the shoreline. And then maybe it breaks off from kind of that 3-4 foot down to 7 or 8. And then you maybe get a next break down to 12-15. When the wind is not blowing super hard, and when maybe it's early and it's not quite into the full-on fall pattern, I find a lot of fish in that 10 to 15 foot pattern. And that's where jigs are going to be part of your wind-driven solution. But it gets better and better with stronger winds and then later into the fall. And I really think that the way that crankbaits shine, especially balsa crankbaits shine, is that you can throw them right up against shore. And the fish are literally in 3 to 5 feet of water looking to rush up and trap bait fish up against the shoreline, up against the rocks. And so quite often when it's been a strong wind event in September or it gets later into October and you've just had a consistent wind direction, you can throw a balsa bait up against those rocks and it floats a couple real turns, literally 2 or 3 real turns. You're feeling rocks. You bounce the bait off one rock, literally 3 feet from shore, and immediately you're hooked up. And that tells you everything you need to know about the rest of your day. I mean, it tells you that fish are positioned up there. They're literally looking to trap bait up against it. And it's usually when that happens early in the day, you know, you're really in for, you know, one for the ages, because those fish have been conditioned to go up there to do one thing, and that's just chow on bait. So I really look forward to it because it's just such a positive response. You can feel the crankbait, you can feel the rocks you're bouncing off of, and right away you get just such positive confirmation from a fish coming up and T-boning that thing.
The JMO podcast is sponsored by Long Haul Trucking. Long Haul's always looking for more skilled professional CDL drivers to join their team. They're a people-first company, and it shows. Their employee-owned, asset-based fleet of over 350 Conestogas is among industry leaders in pay and benefits geared towards long-term success and growth for company drivers and owner-operators. If you're a professional driver or a company that wants to ship product with the best in the business, get a hold of Longhaul at 1-800-255-5153 or find them online at longhaultrucking.com. Longhaul, running on the power of promises kept. You know, and in the fall, another big conversation another piece that's probably a part of every fall fishing conversation is that, you know, the fish kind of get spread out. And by that, I mean, like, regionally, you know, not every lake fish is the same. You get to the boat ramp, you know, whether it's on the same lake or you talk to somebody that fished a lake close by, they might have caught them out deep on that secondary break. You were in shallow and whatever, it spreads fish out. How do you kind of work through that to really get to those shallow fish? Because I'm with you, man. If there's fish everywhere, the shallow fish are typically the ones feeding. They're kind of the most fun to catch. And, you know, there's just a lot to like about everything that you just said. And so I'm totally into it. But for you in the fall, when you are going, do you spend a fair amount of time just trying to mark fish? And what are you seeing on the graph, whether it's maybe you're seeing some fish out a little deeper, but not enough of them, that makes you want to get through all of that to get to the shallow fish?
Well, it actually starts before I even hit the lake. You know, I try fishing a lot of lakes that are conducive to that kind of bite. And so let me give you an example of lakes that are. The lakes that are don't have a ton of emergent vegetation out in front of rocky or sandy or gravelly areas. Literally, a lot of them are straight sand up against rock. And if you have lakes like that with big windblown stretches of good rock, you're always going to be in that game with a good wind in the fall. Now, if you're fishing lakes that have a lot of emergent vegetation, call it reed beds, call it, you know, lily pads or whatever, up against it, right away my mindset changes. And then I think in the fall, maybe rigging big chubs. And then I start thinking about I think about wind very differently then. Then I think about wind in terms of offshore structure. And I think about it in terms of starting to use my electronics more to look and find those fish. And yeah, you mentioned in the fall, fish can be notoriously spread out. And you're right, because it's just a dynamic period. You got weather changing. You've got things like turnover happening, the loss of the thermocline. You've got bait fish species that are doing different things than they did the previous couple months. So yeah, if I'm on a bigger lake, specifically in northern Minnesota, that's got a lot of that shallow shoreline emergent vegetation, a lot of times I will look offshore. I'll use my electronics, but I'll still look for concentrations of fish. Side imaging is great for finding fish on an initial pass, but a lot of times then I like to drive right over them because there's no penalty for doing that a lot of times in, 20 feet of water. And that's where I use the down imaging to look to find pods of fish. And if I find a handful of them, then boy, is it fun to rig some big chubs down there, because you just know when you get bit, it's a quality fish situation. So that's kind of my 1-2 punch for fall. I think shallow and I do think deep, but it depends on the lakes that I'm hitting. And I, like you said, if you can fish those shallow fish and plan your lake hopping around it, that's what I try to do.
Oh yeah, I I mean, especially in the fall, being that kind of that fun big fish time of year, and you can catch lots of fish. It's like there's almost no sense in doing the same thing 2 days in a row. Now I say that, but if the bite's that good, you kind of get them where you left off yesterday. But what a time of year for the adventurous fisherman, the guy that's really wants to get after it and you want to learn. And there's enough bites going on that if it's been a while since you've casted fish shallow, that's the bite. To me, I would be like just foaming at the mouth to figure that out.
I think you bring up a good point. Part of it is like, yeah, I've been spending the previous couple months rigging fish deep or pulling lead core, doing whatever deep. It's fun just to grab a bait, throw it shallow again, and hook up. And so aside from the fun part of it, it's also a really great way to break down and cover a lot of water. So you just, if fish should be active, you should fish active presentations to be able to cover the most water and just hit on the most active fish in any system. So that's that's kind of where my strategy lies. And it's about fun. It's about flexing those casting muscles again, but I think it's just an efficient way to fish.
Yeah, totally. And when you find the most productive parts of the lake and the productive pieces of shoreline or whatever it is, it's probably a multi-species deal at that point too, not?
Absolutely. You know, especially down on the Mississippi, you never know what you're going to hook up into, because when those shad are up there shallow, everything is up there trying to eat on them. Definitely the big walleyes, but even in a lot of lakes, in natural lakes that I've fished up in the northern part of the state and in the Wisconsin and other states, it's a great time for big largemouth and smallies too. Man, some of the biggest largies you're ever going to catch are going to be in those same exact spots. They're doing nothing different than the walleyes are. And the smallie dynamic changes things a little bit, just because smallies are so big, bad, and tough. I tend to, when I'm on lakes with smallies, I tend to encounter stretches that have walleyes and then stretches that have smallmouth. They're a little more segregated, but the largemouth tuck right in there with the walleyes, no problem.
Well, that's kind of a fair assessment. You know, I mean, that's probably just like a little observation of yours, but in all honesty, that could be, you know, for somebody that's listening and trying to dissect that could be monumental for them, for their time management on the water, if they're just trying to target one or the other.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, that can be a really great tip for sure. And yeah, I mean, and to get into your crankbaits, I mean, you know, I don't know. I like to spend at least a certain amount of time talking about tackle, just so that we can give some people some good information to go on if they want to go make a buying decision somewhere at a store. I mean, for you, how, you know, when you really feel like you're going to be on a shallow crankbait casting bite, you know, in that more fall time frame, I mean, do you got some, you know, does it really matter what you're throwing? I mean, how heavy is your tackle box?
Yeah, you know, I think it does matter a little bit what you're throwing. Maybe less so color-wise, more so size profile-wise. There's that new Northland Rumble shad. I fish a lot of shad-style baits. And, you know, the shad-style baits you're fishing early in the season, the number five size, right? Just because that tends to match the hatch of a lot of what is out there. But at the end of the season, you know, you've got a full season of growth on a lot of these minnow species. And, you know, walleyes, I think, are looking to maximize their efficiency too. And a good morsel is a good morsel, however you stack it. So the number seven size, even number nine sizes, you know, you can throw up shallow and there's really no penalty for scaring them at this time of year. Like there's no, don't worry about being afraid. Oh man, did I just really overdo it? Am I just trying to club them on the head with a big chunk of balsa, you know? And I don't ever feel that way in the fall. When it's good, you'll get fish of all sizes, even really tiny fish, just tattooing number size, seven size baits. So I worry less about the size as long as it's towards the bigger end, just because they're easier to cast. You dive down a little bit deeper, which again, with balsa, there's no penalty in rocks, shallow even, because you can just slow crawl it through some of that stuff, let it float back up, start your retrieve again. And yeah, so as it pertains to that, look to bigger ones. But when it comes to colors, I'm fishing a lot of turbid water, but not always. Either way, if you got a wind-driven bite, there is, you know, there's stuff in the water being stirred up. So I do favor brighter colors. I love whites and chartreuses. Some of the bright reds are okay, but I'm not worried so much about a crawdad or crayfish type pattern. I'm looking to imitate bait fish. So whites and chartreuses, even like the purple decent or wonder bread type colors, those are incredible, because it just bright white swimming through that turbid water looks just like a bait fish.
Right on. And for, you know, presentations that would maybe jump in line on either end of this, I mean, you know, if it's maybe it's not a full on raging crankbait bite, I mean, do you maybe kind of come into it with those soft plastics, maybe like swim baits or whatever it is? And you know, if they're just jumping in the boat, is there anything you do to kind of speed up the process and cast even more? I mean, in terms of your presentation, like what's kind of the progression kind of leading in and maybe even, you know, going over the top of like a crankbait bite?
Yeah, so I like starting out with cranks, beginning part of the day, hitting shallow, really trying to crawl through a lot of these best producing areas or things that look good to you. You learn it with a crankbait, right? You kind of mentally map it as that bait's touching off with bottom, and you get a few bites and you start figuring out where the fish are positioning. If you are getting bites up near the boat or a ways off of the shore and there's not very many, it's just a key sign that a lot of those fish are not quite up against the shoreline, right? So that's when, like you said, the swim baits, the soft plastics, hair jigs are another great fall bait. And you can put a little bit of plastic on some hair to kind of really offer some extra enticement. And again, I'm thinking whites and chartreuse in a lot of the turbid systems that I'm at. And that's when you can always pitch a jig shallow too. There's nothing against that. It's just a little bit harder to fish as precise because I do tend to slow crawl some of these crankbaits through these rocky areas. And with a jig, if you're trying to fish, as deep as 12, 15, you're probably going to have too heavy of a jig head to fish 3 to 4. So that's when, I'll have a couple rods rigged up, starting out with crankbaits, then working my way into jigs if the fish tell me that they're not shallow. And swim baits I use and utilize a little bit more when a lot of the areas I'm fishing have long linear shorelines and I'm not spot casting to rocks as much perpendicular to shore, but I'm fishing a lot more parallel to shore. That's when swim baits really excel down these long linear features, and I can swim it at a singular depth for a long part of the cast. That I think of that as a great way to fish swim baits.
When we talk walleyes, they're kind of a low light feeder a lot of times. But in the rivers, when the water is stained, you can have, whatever. Talking bite windows in the fall, is do you see the more hungry that those fish are, the more aggressive they are? Are they feeding more ferociously during a similar bite window, or do you see those bite windows kind of opening up? I mean, just on the bites that you experience in the fall, what is it about the fall bite windows that really dictate anything for you?
So much of it to me involves when the wind is blowing the most, and usually early morning or late at night, it's the opposite effect because the wind isn't cooking usually as hard then. You do get exceptions to that rule, but a lot of times that 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. period is when you'll see the heaviest winds of the day. And as long as it doesn't blow you clean off the water or straight into shore, and it's reasonable or tolerable to fish in, that does tend to be where the most activity lies in the fishing situation. Now, the one thing we do need to talk about that can throw a big monkey wrench into the whole system is a full moon. A full moon can change everything because I've had a number of times where if you're too close to that full moon, the fish's feeding patterns almost seem to turn singularly to after dark hours, and they're Trust me, they're up in the same spots, and you could probably catch them with some rattle baits and things like that. But it's often more effective to troll for them up shallow. It just changes your daytime wind bite because, they've switched over to the moonlight feeding pattern.
Right on. And then I suppose at that point in time, you want to go after a night bite, which could be productive. You're going to want to go out during the day and kind of map out your trolling run and see what you can probably cover there. Do you get out at night ever?
Yeah, I do. And I used to be one of those guys that was religiously up to Mille Lacs to do kind of the fall trolling run, and I'd hit, the September one, the October one, and the November one. And now I tend not to do that as much, and I tend to try to recreate some of those bites and other natural lakes because in some places they can be just as good. I've had some really interesting finds. I one time was up at a local lake here as part of a river system, and found the world's most murderous white bass bite, but no walleyes to be found. And the walleyes were there, man. I know they were. It's just they couldn't get a bite in edgewise with all the white bass activity. So it's an interesting time to pull shallow and start doing some trolling. But I agree with you. It is fun to get out a little bit early, maybe 2 hours, hour and a half before dark, map out some of those milk runs, get your sets figured out, and then as you know, as the night approaches, be ready to spring that trap.
What do you got forecasted for yourself? I mean, you know, fall, everybody likes to get out and do a little bit of hunting. You're obviously going to do some fishing. I mean, do you got any like trips kind of planned, or are you going to kind of, is it going to be kind of a traditional year for you? I mean, what are you kind of setting up, or do you got any new things that you think you're going to try, and we could talk about them, and then if they don't work, we'll just edit it out.
Yeah, I actually ran into a lot of success at the end of the summer period leading into fall, trolling, rattling kind of lipless crankbaits for crappies. So that's something I want to kind of explore a little bit more. I'm a big jig troller. I've been on this show and talked a lot about how I do that for crappies during a lot of the times of year. But kind of amazing how effective the fall, kind of end of summer into fall, lipless crankbait trolling was for me. And I'm talking like real small ones, right? Like number four sizes and things like that. And that just, for some reason, that just really clicked last year. And I kind of want to crack into that a little bit more. And I'd like to try throwing those at night during a full moon in some of these clean stretches that I fish, you know, where you just got sand and rocks. Not a lot of ways to snag those up and screw them up unless you bury them in some rock crevice. But, yeah, so I'm gonna do a little bit more work with some lipless crankbait, both trolling and casting is kind of my plan for the fall. But, other than that, yeah, man, I'm going to be looking for my opportunities. I still fish quite a bit. I'm very lucky, very blessed to do that, but I'm still all about, quality over quantity, right? I'm trying to fish my best fish, doing my best work under the best conditions in the best places. And so that's how I kind of like to wait and pick my spots. And if the weather's not giving me some of that cold and bluster, well, then I'll do a little bit of trolling cranks for crappies. If the weather looks to be conducive for some predators, then I'll probably head all over the place. I might head up to Winnie, do a little bit of fishing there. There's such a good fall bite up there that might be a tough one to miss for me this year.
I was just going to ask you that. What you just said there is like, I know you're a multi-species guy. I mean, everybody that fishes probably consider themselves a multi-species guy, but you really are a multi-species guy, and we appreciate that so much about you. I think, you know, Jason's that way too a lot, where he, you know, even walleyes, like he'll say on camera that he'll never get sick of catching a walleye, and that's true, but to an extent it's like sometimes you almost miss the crappies, you know. It's like I wonder if they miss me too, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like, so right. Like for you in the fall, you know, yeah, talking about the conditions, where do you find the conditions for the crappies to be, or good conditions for the crappies to be a little bit more of a bigger window, where if things aren't ideal for a walleye bite, that the crappies should almost kind of be there to back you up?
For sure. It gets tougher. I find it gets tougher as the fall continues for me in crappies. And that's primarily because as crappies start to stage towards ice spots, they become easier and harder in a sense, easier to find. A lot of times I find them in these like little teardrop connected offshoot lakes in a deep hole, you know, places you'll find them in the early winter, or you'll find them on the deep edge of weeds just before the edge of a great big basin that, you know, they'll suspend out over all winter. But they get tougher to catch, obviously, right? They get a little bit more finicky. A lot of times you can't cast to them or troll to them. You got to drop it right in their face. And it just kind of depends on what part of the fall you're talking and what water temps you got. But, you know, I don't love fishing like that. It's fun when there's nothing else going. But a lot of times, you know, it requires you to drop like a Markham over the side, or use your existing boat's electronics and kind of, you know, vertically jig right below the transducer, just to kind of see the school, figure them out, see if you can get one to chase and then eventually eat it. That's not really my gig, but early, especially kind of, let's say the early half of fall, end of summer. Yeah. Crappies aren't just my backup. Depending on the weather, they can be my go-to.
I love it, man. I love it. Any other trendy topics? Like, what have been some of the best conversations that you think you've had, you know, even just over the whole course of the year? I mean, what do you think are some of the best, you know, things that guys are out there talking about right now that, or maybe just if you get a consistency with some fishing questions that we could just answer here?
Yeah, you know, some of the best things I've been talking to guys, you know, just like you, you kind of rub elbows with some really good fishermen, and it's fun to talk to them, to hear how, my question to the guys is always the same thing. And these guys that I know and I'm friends with, they're probably get sick of hearing me. I'm always asking, how'd you get them? You know, I don't care. You don't tell me where, don't tell me, you know, just how'd you do it? You know, what was the pattern? I want to learn more too. I'm always interested. And a lot of guys this year I talked to, we're catching walleyes in that Brainerd Lakes area and north and west in the weeds and doing really well in clear water bodies in like anywhere as shallow as 8 feet of water all the way out to 15. And I was really picking their brain for how they're pulling, you know, anything from like kind of slow death crawler harnesses through these areas. Pulling heavy bullet sinkers through these spots, almost like Carolina rigging, but with live bait. And it was just kind of fascinating to me because it's a trend that I had been talking to guys about everywhere from Gull to local lakes in north central Minnesota, some of the big waters like Leech. It just seemed to come up again and again and again. And then trying to replicate it, I was often either fishing too deep and not getting bites, or I was fishing in areas that just held so many panfish, it became very challenging to get bit by a walleye. But always something to learn. There's always a fishing weakness each of us has, and it's always good to pick on things that we need to get better at.
Dude,
and
I mean, weedy, yeah.
Weedy walleyes is one of mine.
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, that is such a good point, man. It's always guys like yourself. You're always out there challenging yourself. I think a lot of people scratch their head like, why? You know where there's good fish. You know bites, but that's not the deal. Just going out and windmilling them every day. Not even that's even possible, even in the best spots and conditions, but just having the mentality that there's always something to learn is really, I think, what makes a guy, gets guys fired up for learning.
Well, yeah, it's also why I love the multi-species aspect. You know, Jason, I've talked to him many times and I know he agrees. There's times where you're not sick of catching walleyes, but if you're on a really good walleye bite, maybe you've just kind of had your fill, right? Like you've been there, you've figured out what you could, you've enjoyed it. It's been a blast. What else could we do? What other species might be cracking? Is there another puzzle to solve? And that it's about the chase, you know, it's just so much fun.
We are like over time. So let's wrap it up, dude. Where can people find you? Anything that you want to promote or just, you know, just anything, any little last second send-offs?
No, you know, you can always track me down. I'm doing a lot more writing these days. You'll see me in InFish and Outdoor News and a lot of those places. But my website is kind of a collection of everything. So if you're ever interested in what I'm up to at any point in the season, kind of what's hot, what I've been fishing for, what's been seasonally good, www.joelnelsonoutdoors.com. And I try and do a good job throughout social media. I'm at Joel Nelson or facebook.com/Joel Nelson Outdoors. And you can track me down there. And I'm seasonal, man. I really try to fish what's best and do what's best. And before you know it, I'll be picking wild plums because, well, at the end of August, that may be the best use of my time outdoors. So it's stuff like that that I'm really into.
That's awesome, man. I'm into that stuff too. That's why you are minus JM, the most reoccurring guest on this show. So there you go. There you have it. But Joel, dude, appreciate the time. I'll let you back to it, man.
Cool. Hey, thanks so much, Taylor. I really appreciate it.
Right on, brother. Good luck out there. All right. And yeah, we'll be in touch.
All right. Take care.